Coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios. The Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha. Here are your hosts, Coach Rick Cleveland, Coach Mark Lassiter, and Corey Labounty.
Good morning and welcome to the Prep Sports Report presented by Alpha and coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios located right here in the heart of Mobile, Alabama. Good morning, Mark Lassiter.
Good morning, Coach. Hope everybody's well this morning.
Mark, after a night of football last night where we saw some improbables become probable and some heartbreaks turn into a great deal of joy, we also saw some mighty strange things happen in high school football last night. And I know you were at one of them. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little later on. But right now what we're going to do is we're going to give you last night's scores, and we'll give you the quarterfinal matchups right after that. So our phone lines are always open on the CNC Financial and Auto Sales communication lines. 251-343-0106. You can text us. You can call us. Either way. And I know that there's a lot of you out there that are heartbroken. Your children have played their final high school game, and there's others that are just completely, boy, I don't know. There's, you know, and I'm thinking about UMS last night with a minute and 8 seconds to go. They were down three, and that little Stafford boy takes the kickoff back 100 yards, almost 95 yards, as a matter of fact. Kobe takes it 95 yards, and UMS goes up, and good gracious, with just a few seconds left in the game, 47 seconds or so, it seems like, they then kicked off, and they'd been penalized 15 yards, Mark, after they scored the touchdown because – one of our players was so excited, and he got a 15-yard penalty, so we had to back up. And so kicked off to Pike Road, and what happens but a fumble. And they fumble the ball, and Cole Blaylock picks it up and goes, I don't know how many yards, goes in for a touchdown. UMS goes up. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that happen in high school football, but I'm going to tell you, it was a great win, 28-17.
You know, we've talked about this on this show before, about how Terry Curtis always is emphatic every year, every week, every day about his kicking game, about how they're going to do this and what they're going to do and how vital it is to winning ball games. And, and whether it's just punting. You know, a lot of times you just have a punter that keeps the other team backed up, and you're able to win ball games because you win the field position battle. But then, like last night, you know, the kids believe in what they do.
Man.
It's a kickoff return, and all of a sudden it's, you know, 21-17 right after. You would have to think that the touchdown scored with a minute and 8 by Pike Road would be like a dagger.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, oh, man, this is it, you know. But thank goodness kids – you know, a lot of kids, the teams that make it through the playoffs are the ones who say it's never over.
Right.
It's never over till it's over. And that's what, to me, that's what happens, you know, coaching, teaching kids about kicking game, how important it is, and never giving up.
Well, they never gave up, that's for sure. All right, let's go through these scores from last night, and then we'll give you the quarterfinal matchups right here. In 7A, Auburn 13, Daphne 7. Kenny King's team fought valiantly all night long, and came up a little bit short. Tough place to play in Auburn. And so Adam Weingarten and the Auburn Tigers will advance 13-7 over Daphne. Central of Phoenix City, 30-24. Boy, Mark, Eric Collier and his kids did a great job. They had, with probably 6 minutes to go in the game, maybe a little less than that, they had to score a touchdown and get a two-point play successfully just to get the game to where they had a chance to win it. Well, and then Central takes the ball down in about three plays, scores their last touchdown, and Central defeats Theodore 30-24. Hoover defeats Oak Mountain 24-21, a little closer than we thought it would be. Thompson, 42. Hewitt Trustful, 16. So that sets up that matchup. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Blount, 41, 6A. Blount, 41. Eufaula, 28. Clay Chalkville, 42. Homewood, 0. Mountain Brook, 6. Gardendale, 0. Opelika, 28. Hillcrest, Tuscaloosa, 0. Oxford, 35. Briarwood, 14. That's it. Pinson Valley, 48. Shades Valley, 16. Sarah Land, 31. Lee of Montgomery, 0. Spanish Fort, 40. Helena, 7. In Class 5A, Alexandria, 32. Parker, 21. Central Clay County, 28. Andalusia, 21. Faith Academy, 31. Demopolis, 6. Pleasant Grove, 42. Gunnersville, 21. Ramsey, 52. Fairview, 14. Russellville, 35. Leeds, 14. St. Paul's just rolls all over Selma, 44-0. And UMS Wright advances 28-17 over Pike Road. Previously undefeated Pike Road, I might add. Alabama Christian in 4A. Alabama Christian, 31. Jacksonville, 21. American Christian, 27. Mobile Christian, 21. Bibb County, 29. Anniston, 28. Etowah, 42. Haleyville, 24. Gordo, 39. Aniana, 21. Hanley, 42. Montevallo, 13. Northside, 28. Madison County Academy, 21. Somebody picked them to win this thing, Madison Academy. West Limestone, 21. Good Hope, 12. In Class 3A, Catholic Montgomery. Mark, doesn't surprise you, I'm sure. They defeated Opp, 38-0. Fife, 42. Walter Welburn, 13. Montgomery Academy, 28. Pike County, 6. Ohatchee, 54. Winfield, 27. Piedmont, 46. Plainview, 7. Sachs, 49. J.B. Pennington, 14. And I know this one sticks in your craw a little bit, Mark. Thomasville, 28. T.R. Miller, 21. We'll talk a little bit about that after a while, too. And Trinity, 41. Slocum, the Red Tops, 0. In Class 2A, Abbeville, 56. B.B. Comer, 34. Let me tell you this. Adam Fawcett and the B.B. Comer Tigers have had a tremendous year, and I'm going to tell you, that's been a surprise to everybody, and congratulations to Adam Fawcett and those B.B. Comer Tigers. Had a great season, and Abbeville's just a mighty tough place to play down in the Wiregrass, so congratulations to Abbeville. Aliceville, 48, Cleveland, 42, Isabella, 20, Clark County, 13, Lynette, 37, G.W. Long, 3, Leroy, 26, Geneva County, 16, Mars Hill, 56, Westbrook Christian, 21, North Sand Mountain, 32, Addison, 24, Spring Garden, 27, Red Bay, 2. In Class 1A, Berry, 26, Woodland, 16, Brantley, 48, Keith, 6, Brilliant, 21, Raglan, 14, Hubbardville, 35, Winterboro, 13, Linden, 50, McKenzie, 13, Maplesville, 48, Millry, 14, Pickens County, 48, Decatur Heritage, 28, Sweetwater, 57, Notasauga, 28. In the private schools, Class 3A, Glenwood, 35, Morgan Academy, 6, Pike Liberal Arts, 35, Bessemer Academy, 15. In Class 2A in private schools, Chambers Academy, 51, Edgewood, 20, Escambia Academy, 54, Macon East, 13. In single A, Abbeville Christian, 28, Jackson Academy, 20, and Crenshaw Christian, 53, Sparta, 29. When we come back after the break, we're going to give you all the matchups, and we'll talk a little bit about each one. Mark, I know that you saw Thomasville and T.R. Miller real quick. Kind of give us a rundown on that one.
Well, it was, you know, a kind of tale of two halves. You know, the first half, T.R. Miller seemed to be relatively in control of the game. And then right before the end of the half, Thomasville started getting things going. And they went in at halftime, it was 2 minutes to go in a half, 7-7. T.R. Miller takes the ball, drives it 75 yards in less than 2 minutes and scores a touchdown, go up 14-7. And then in the second half, Thomasville just came out with a lot of juice. I don't know what Jack Hankins did to him at halftime or what they talked about or how he got him invigorated, but they came out with a lot of juice. And then on the second play of the half, T.R. Miller fumbled the ball, and Thomasville got it, scored the next play, tied things up, and they got rolling. And it was like, I don't know if we can get them turned off after that. And Thomasville showed their strength in the second half, especially on their offensive front. And they kind of knocked T.R. Miller around a little bit, which kind of surprised me.
Right.
But Thomasville's got a good football team. They've kind of sat over there in Thomasville, and and been quiet most of the year. Nobody knows a whole lot about him. You don't hear a whole lot about them. But they're very, very good. They're going to give somebody some trouble for us things all over.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that matchup coming up. When we come back, we're going to talk to Arthur Mack, covering state cross country. And that'll be in the next segment. And then we'll give you all the matchups for all seven championship matchups in Super 7. We'll be back right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Radio Alabama.
The CNC Financial and Auto Sales communication lines are open at 251-343-0106. This segment of the Prep Sports Report, presented by Green & Phillips Attorneys at Law. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to PSR and Radio Alabama. Arthur Mack pretty much keeps us up and in touch with everything going on in track and field, and of course, cross country is right in the midst of state competition. Good morning, Arthur. How you doing?
Done.
How you doing, pal?
Hey, great to be on today.
What you got going for us this weekend, Arthur?
Well, we have the state cross country championships up here at Oakville.
Right.
Kind of cool, nice running weather, and some very interesting scenarios for today's meet, believe it or not.
Well, who's the front runner in all of this?
Well, I would have to say team-wise, as far as, state championship material, Huntsville's boys in 7A. But the interesting thing about 7A boys is that St. Paul's is competing in that classification because of the competitive rule.
Right.
And St. Paul's has been the dominant team in the Mobile area, led by Matt Conwell and Stone Smith. It's going to be very interesting to see if the Saints can break into the top five, because unlike last season when they competed in 6A, this is an entirely different level, and the competition is a whole lot keener. But we shall see.
Who are the individuals that you expect to see in 7A that should be in the top five runners?
Well, our best chances for a top five finish come from Matt Conwell of St. Paul's, as I mentioned earlier. Now, as for 7A girls, the young lady to watch locally is Lindsay Baxter of Baker. She's been running some very outstanding times throughout the season, and she could very well break into the top five with a great performance today.
Let's look at the other classifications, Arthur, and who do you expect to see there?
Okay. On the boys and girls side, I'm expecting McGill Tulin and Spanish Fort to make a pretty good showing. 5A is going to be very interesting as well, simply because of the fact that you have Joseph Perry of UMS Wright, who was last year's 4A individual winner, but with UMS Right, competing in 5A, he has a pretty good chance of at least getting into the top three, if not winning the individual title outright. Incidentally, his brother Matthew has been running some pretty outstanding times too. So between those two, there should be two runners in the top five. And also, let's not count out Faith Academy. Boys and girls have been coming along pretty strongly. Especially the girls. I think what we're looking at is a top five finish from Faith Academy as well.
Well, that's
4A,
that's pretty
going
strong.
To be another interesting thing, because you have St. Michael's, who was last year's 3A boys champ. They're led by Tripp Miller, and they've been pretty strong this season too.
When you think about the 4A race, does Faith have a chance to win the team title in that?
Well, I'm not sure if Faith's going to have a chance to win 5A, because, like I said before, the competition's a little bit keener. You have Randolph High of Huntsville, which is very strong. So I'm hoping for at least a top five finish team-wise from Faith Academy.
So in this area, when we look in Southwest Alabama, McGill, St. Paul's, even though St. Paul's has had to move up to 7A, mm-hmm. UMS Wright, Faith, and then Spanish Fort, those are the teams you think should do well.
Right. One other team that bears mentioning in a smaller school classification is Bayshore Christian. They've really come along very well in the boys and girls competition. It's going to be interesting to see if they can grab a team title because they might sneak in and surprise some people. You may recall Bayshore Christian's volleyball team won a state title in that first year of competition. So we'll see if the cross-country team could pull the same trick.
Well, Jeff Hague's done a great job over there as the athletic director, and they've got a couple of baseball players, too, that are being highly recruited. So that young school is – they're kind of imposing their will. So it's
Yeah. So let's not forget about Bayside Academy. And they're also in 4A this year because of the competitive rule. They won their sectional in the boys competition, I believe.
Right.
So their boys and girls should do pretty well. In 3A, yeah, Mobile Christian competing – at the 3A level, and they have a couple of individual runners, Barton Irwin and Walker Ruther, who should, vie for all state honors. So all in all, the Mobile area, well, Southwest Alabama as a whole is going to pretty much hold its own.
So, Arthur, what time do they start the race?
All right. 3A girls are going to start in 4 minutes, 8:30. Class 5A boys is at 8:50. That's going to be, as I said before, it's going to be a very interesting race to watch. It's going to be interesting to see how the Perry brothers can do against steeper competition.
Well, thank you for keeping us posted on all cross-country and track the year-round. We appreciate it, Arthur, and we'll try to get you back on next week to kind of give us a rundown on how everything finished.
All right. I'm sure looking forward to it.
Appreciate it, Arthur. Take care,
okay.
Pal.
All right, you too. Take care.
All right, let's go over the the scenario here, I'm trying to get on the website. It's hard to find some of these things, but let's start with 7A. In 7A, Central Phoenix City is at Auburn. Now, you know, they'll play that next week, Mark, but they got a 2-week break in between. So, 7A, Central Phoenix City at Auburn. Hoover at Thompson. That should be one heck of a matchup. Opelika goes to Saraland. In 6A. Blount is at Spanish Fort. Oxford is at Pinson Valley. Clay Chalkville is at Mountain Brook. In 5A, UMS Wright goes to Faith Academy. Central of Clay County comes to St. Paul's. Pleasant Grove is at Alexandria. And Russellville is at Ramsey. In Class 4A, American Christian goes to Alabama Christian. Bibb County goes to Hanley of Roanoke. Northside goes to Etowah. West Limestone is at Gordo. In Class 3A, boy, this will be – these. I don't think these people exchange Christmas cards here in Montgomery. Class 3A, Trinity Presbyterians at Montgomery Academy. Montgomery Catholic is at Thomasville. Fife is at Ohatchee, and Sachs is at Piedmont. In Class 2A, Isabella is at Abbeville. Lynette is at Leroy. North Sand Mountain is at Spring Garden, and Mars Hill is at Aliceville. In Class 1A, Linden is at Sweetwater, Maplesville is at Brantley, Brilliant is at Berry, and Hubbardville is at Pickens County. That's some pretty good matchups, Mark. And when we come back from the break here, we're going to break some of those down. But, some programs that have been really, really good for a long time, we're missing some of those in here. But, you know, the one that really excites me is a 7A matchup between Thompson and Hoover, and then the 5A matchup between UMS Wright and Faith. That should be two great high school football games.
I don't know how they'll do tickets for that one.
No, I don't
know. You know how it's restricted, but, man, everybody over there would want to go see that ball game. That's going to be quite a ball game. Clay Central and St. Paul's is going to be quite a game as well. That's two pretty good powerhouses going at it head-to-head. Also, Opelika's at Saraland.
Yeah.
And that's a that's going to be a fun one to watch. I think that's going to be a really good ball game, and I think Jeff Kelly's got his guys playing pretty well right now. So that would be that's going to be interesting to watch as we come around to the quarterfinals. A big game in 3A is Fife at Ohatchee. Ohatchee is the team that finally beat Piedmont this year. It was the first team beat Piedmont in a long time, and Fife draws them in the semis. So Piedmont then plays another really good team in Sachs, but they were able to sidestep having to play Ohatchee in the playoffs. So that's, you know, those are going to be some, it's going to be some really good football. You know, I almost wish we could do it like they do in Georgia, used to do it in Georgia, where they had all the semifinals and quarterfinals, you know, when you get them all down there in one, because I'm going to tell you something, I'd love to watch 7A. Central at Auburn, Hoover at Thompson. I'd like to see both those ball games.
That's going to be two competitive ball games. And like I say, there's not a lot of love lost between some of these matchups.
Not at all.
Not a lot. You know, it's interesting. Piedmont might get another shot at Ohatchee, too.
They might.
It'll be interesting.
That's going to be interesting.
All right, guys, we'll be back with more PSR right here on Radio Alabama. Mark and Rick.
The Prep Sports Report is brought to you by Alpha Insurance. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to PSR and Radio Alabama. You know, Mark, all around the state of Alabama, there's going to be basketball coaches that are elated, and there's going to be some basketball coaches that are disappointed because they still don't get to start their basketball season with their full team because there's basketball players that are still playing football. And while they're pulling for their team to win, there's still that little dilemma out there that they're missing some really good basketball players. And I would imagine that in that 7A matchup, Central Phoenix City's probably got some really good basketball players that are still playing football. And but I rest assured, Patrick Nix, I'm sure, will let those guys do what they need to do to be in basketball shape. But that's going to be an interesting matchup between Central and Auburn. That's a rematch. And so Adam Weingarten has had a tremendous season again there at Auburn with a 10-1 year. But when you look at Central to Phoenix City, has it taken Patrick Nix maybe this long to get his team where they need to be? And sure, they had some hiccups early on, but this should be some kind of matchup with Central and Auburn.
I would think it would be. You know, you have an entrenched coach, and Adam Weingarten been there for a few years now, and we all know what kind of coach Adam is. He just does a really good job in all the areas of the program. And Auburn's got a really good football team, and I think that their ability to score is going to be the thing. Phoenix City seems to me like, I mean, I could be wrong because I haven't seen them play, is more of a, you know, going to pound you, and you're going to have to stand up there and take it. Now, can Auburn stand up there and take the onslaught running right at them? I don't know. Can Phoenix City stop Adams Auburn football team when they run their – they run their RPOs, and they do a really good job. And they can run the ball downhill as well. But they do a rig. Once you start fitting on his running game, he'll go over the top of you. So it's kind of a matchup that that I think is very intriguing. Of course, you know, Coach Nix does a really good job with his passing game, play action pass, and things of that nature that he does a really good job with. When he had Bo a couple years ago at Pinson Valley, it's the only time I've seen his team play. And I thought they had some really good schemes, what they did offensively. Defensively is going to be the deal, and it's just like, you know, last night in the Miller-Thomasville game, a turnover turned the tide of the game. You know, and those are the things that we talk about incessantly on this show is going to be turnovers, kicking game, field position. Usually when you get to this part of the season, everybody's pretty stinking good.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to just go out there and whip something. You're going to have to do all the things right in all three phases of the game. And I think that's where this game's going to be won or lost in Auburn is between who's going to get the turnover and who's going to win a kicking game.
You know, when you talk about the other 7A matchup with Hoover and Thompson, Hoover, of course, being 11-1, their only loss coming to Thompson. So now when you look at that, Mark Freeman kind of has you know, I guess he's kind of got an up on Hoover right now because I think the last three times they've played, they've beat Hoover. So, and when you look at that matchup, you talk about RPOs, and I want you to explain what an RPO is because a lot of our listeners out there don't understand what an RPO is. But it's a run-pass option is what it is. But and I don't think you guys do much of that in what y'all do with the wing team.
We see some. We see a good bit. We don't do a whole lot of it ourselves.
Well, there's a lot of questions about the RPOs because a lot of times those linemen are downfield, first of all, and second of all, the quarterback sometimes it's over the line of scrimmage. And, you know, as linesmen on the field, as officials, that's something that they've got to be cognizant of. So I want you to explain what an RPO actually is.
If everybody will go back, if you can remember the Alabama-Auburn game several years ago when Nick Marshall ran an option play, okay, came out, looked like they had him stopped, and all of a sudden he stopped and threw the ball to a wide receiver who was down the left sideline.
Wide open.
Wide open.
Yeah.
Because everybody had come to play the option. Now, that was the first time I really recognized what was going on. And on that play, there was, like you said, a lineman a little bit downfield.
Right.
But he's in a real gray area right there. Anyway, RPO is where the quarterback, and it depends on what level you're at with your quarterback as to how many things you're going to do. It started with the zone read. You hear the zone read. Everybody hears zone. Okay, the quarterback, what he does on that is they run the zone, and he is reading someone. Usually it's the end man of the line of scrimmage.
Right.
If he closes to tackle the back, the quarterback will pull it and run. Okay, that's a simplified version of how that works. Then it went to a little bit more difficult stuff. You saw with Cam Newton used to run where they'd bring the back come through there. He'd pop around. He'd go block. He wouldn't block that guy. He'd go block an outside linebacker because if the end squeezed, then the quarterback was going to run it. All right? So, and he had a blocker in front.
Right.
So then they went to another level. And I heard, I've got brain like offensive coordinator at Fairhope right now. Joel Williams.
Joel Williams.
I heard Joel speak at a clinic, and he went through one of the progressions, what they do. And it goes like this. He lines up. He sees how many's in the box, how many defenders are in it. Is it going to be a run, or are we going to throw it?
Right.
Okay. So he looks at it and sees what it is. All right, so if he sees and if he's not sure, then he just reads the option.
Right.
Okay, so here comes the back on the zone read. Back comes through. He's no longer looking at the end.
Right.
Okay, he's looking at the overhang linebacker that's in the flat in between himself and the first receiver outside. And so what he did, if that guy closes, then he pulls the ball and throws the slant or throws whatever route they have off of it. That is the run to the zone, quarterback keep run or pass to the receiver, depending on what the defense does. And it depends on at what level you as a coach feel like your quarterback can handle how many options you give him.
So really what it is, the RPO now has gone where the triple option went running the football. It's a triple option of throwing the ball. It's exactly what it is.
And you know how you used to pitch the ball backwards?
Yep, now you're pitching it forward.
Now you're pitching it forward down the field, and that's the same thing. And I'll tell you, Montgomery Catholic does a great job with it. When we played them the other night, they run their wide receiver back in motion, okay, and bring him over the top, ride the fullback. He's out there for pitch, and they still got a receiver who can run the slant route. So if you close too hard, they're going to throw the ball over.
Well, the people it really puts in a bind are the corners. Yep. The corners who, you know, if they're playing man, they could be playing man free. You could have a safety over the top. If you're playing man free with somebody over the top, then a lot of times that corner will come up and expect that safety to pick up that receiver. But it is the run pass option, and even Coach Saban has made comments about it, about it's a very sticky situation because it puts your corners and your safeties in a bind.
It changed the game of football.
It did. Absolutely.
I mean, I heard Coach Saban say the other day, in today's football world, your offense has got to be able to score. Period.
Right.
You know, and I heard him say too. I heard him. I've kind of listened to how he's, because he's changed a lot in the last few. If y'all haven't noticed, it's a lot of difference. The defense is not like it used to be. They don't play football like they did 10 years ago.
Right.
It's just not that game anymore. So what they have to do is get stops. I heard him say that. We said, we got to get a couple more stops than they get.
Right.
Well, usually he said, we got to get them three and out.
Yeah.
And now it's just, let's get a stop.
Right.
If we can get a stop, then our offense can have the ball and we can go score. You see?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good analogy there, Marky. Somebody else that puts a lot of pressure on the officials. It is a tough call for those officials. And generally they have to get together to do that. And here, I know that we've seen it here with Mobile officials, and I'm sure with other officials throughout the state of Alabama, they're going to they're going to congregate. They're going to come together and discuss that, and they'll make that decision. After a lot of times they move the chains, though, Mark. You know, that's something that people on the sidelines that move the chains are really just volunteers. Until we get into championship play where we have officials on the chains and they don't move it until that referee says move it, then it really becomes – it's an issue.
And there again, so many teams these days are so fast-paced.
Right.
And it's like fast-paced basketball. You know, full court pressure, here we go. We're going to go up and down this court until you can't go anymore. That's a lot of the philosophy, just to get the timing messed up or for the defense and not let the defense substitute. So the official, he's got to watch the play, spot the ball, move the chains or whatever they have to do, and that offense is standing over the ball ready to go, and he's trying to hurry because the coach is over there going, come on, snap the ball, because they're wanting to go fast. And so the official's trying to get – I think they've kind of gotten this under control. 3 years ago, the balls would be snapped and the chains weren't even
set.
You know, it was – but our officials have done a great job in themselves changing with the game. Because the hardest thing for them to see right now in the RPO is linemen downfield.
That's the hardest thing. No doubt.
Because you just don't – and sometimes – I will say this. Sometimes them old boys are so big, you can't miss them.
It's hard to miss them. That's exactly right.
But that's – that the RPO has changed the game for everyone. And the passing game today is so far out there. You know, it's unbelievable where the ball game has gone in the last since I've been coaching, Rick. It has gone unbelievably fast and more spread out and very difficult to contain.
Well, and it's much more complicated in that what the run pass option does is it makes everybody play their keys, and sometimes even when you play your keys correctly, you still give up a big play. And that's the hard part of that. And, you know, as coaches, when you break down film and you're watching your film, you say, well, boy, that linebacker's in perfect position. He's right where he needs to be. Bam, there comes the receiver coming right across that he's supposed to get. And he's watching that back coming through C-gap or wherever. And there is somebody dragging across, and he can't do both.
He can't do both. And you're trying to figure out, okay, what do? Do we put more guys in coverage? Do we play man coverage and blitz him? What do we do? And now, if you notice, quarterbacks all across the country, we don't have a whole lot of just straight, sit-in-the-pocket, drop-back quarterbacks anymore.
Right.
You got guys who can avoid the rush and make something happen.
Right.
Because a lot of teams are playing man and bringing the house, trying to get the quarterback off rhythm so he doesn't have time to sit there and go through his read progression.
Right.
So it's fun to watch football change and morph into something different than an old dinosaur like me trying to keep up with it. Sometimes I want to see us getting an eye formation, turn around and a ball off.
We got a text message from Pete Story, a guy that
I know
from Chambersburg, and he's a white hat guy.
Yeah.
Does a great job. Seen him several times at Super 7. Does a great job, and appreciate those guys around Sylacauga, Talladega, Childersburg, and that entire area, the Coosa Valley area, being a part of us here on PSR. We'll be back with more. You never know what's going to happen with Rick and Mark here, but we'll be back with more right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Radio Alabama.
This segment of the Prep Sports Report, brought to you by Parker Dental and Orthodontics. PSR is live every Saturday from 8 until 10 a.m. Now back to Coach Rick Cleveland.
Back to PSR and Radio Alabama. You know, there's a lot of folks over on the hill at Spanish Fort who are really excited about a young man by the name of Brendan Byrd, a sophomore quarterback who last night counted for 5 of the 6 touchdowns. And Spanish Fort rode past Helena 40-7. So they're now 26-0 in first or second round playoff games. That's pretty strong, Mark. 26-0 in first and second round playoff games, and that school's only been around for, you know what, since late 90s? No, early 2000s.
Early 2000.
Yeah, and so 26-0 in first and second round playoffs, and this young Brendan Byrd, you can only imagine that they're pretty excited for the next 2 years after this year. They've got him into the quarterfinals now with a young man that's a sophomore. So you got to look at him as one of the top looking athletes or one of the top athletes in this area. He was like 14 for 23 last night, 184 yards passing, 11 for 19 in the first half. And they beat a pretty good Helena team that beat Terry and UMS last week over in Helena. So that's an exciting player that we all, golly, we can get a chance to see him in the future. And then I think another game last night was Blunt. And Blunt, I'm sure Jarius Williams just had a fabulous game. And so it was it's kind of neat to see some of these players that we're expecting to hear a lot more from. But that's a great win for Spanish Fort last night. And we'll certainly be keeping up with them as we move forward. Mark, as you see all of these things that are going on, talk a little bit about some of these other matchups. And I know you know a lot about Thomasville from seeing them last night, but their matchup this coming week should be something that all of us would want. I mean, I know I'd love to see that game, but it's just not one with us playing over at Faith. I know that's where I'm going to be. But tell us a little bit more about Thomasville, because I know that Jack's running the wing tee. But, you know, for so long what Thomasville did was they would misdirect you. And I'm sure with the wing tee, there's a lot of that misdirection coming as well. But they're doing something even a little bit different with the wing tee, aren't they?
Yeah, it looks to me like they are. It wasn't as much misdirection from what I saw last night. Now, I just got to watch, you know, the entire ball game, and it's hard sometimes to know exactly what they're doing. But it looked like to me they were running more power wing tee. They were just running right at T.R. Miller, and then they had three plays they would do the perimeter, and it was either a quick pitch or a toss to the fullback or a jet sweep, and they scored on a jet sweep, they scored on a quick pitch, and of course they scored on Coach Savarese's number one play, the trap. They ran, they hit 32 trap right up there, and it went out the gate for a touchdown. Thomasville's offense has got a lot of speed on it, and they got good size on their offensive line. They are not a great throwing team. They don't throw the ball great, but they do some really good things running the ball. And Jack Hankins has always done a good job of taking what he's got and using what he's got and making it fit. And that's what they're doing. They're big across the front. They got a nice big offensive line. They're doing some different things with their wing back, who can be a runner or he can be a blocker, and he's actually going in motion. Kind of like it reminded me, this is going to go back a day or two, to Barry Holiday when he was at Anniston.
Right.
He would take a back, and I think they call him, and the college coaches I think call him sniffers, where they're just kind of it's an H-back type
right,
guy.
Right, an H-back. Yeah.
And he's running, but he'll run back and forth. What he did last night is he would put him in motion, and he would start, and you weren't sure if it was just motion, if it was jet motion or fast motion, or what he was doing, but then they would snap the ball, they'd block everybody down, and he'd kick out the end. And then they'd lead the halfback through, and they ran the strong side, what we call a strong side belly, which is nothing but the old off-tackle play
right.
from the I formation, right off the B and C gap, outside of B gap, into C gap over there, and they were making a killing on that last night. So they put their defensive ends in a bind, and Miller – who's had a great season, and they have a really fine football team, were just unable to get them stopped in the second half. Thomasville's defense runs extremely well. They run extremely well. They're going to be very tough to beat, but it's going to be the tale of two teams at Montgomery with them two next week. Catholic can run it. They're more of an RPO option game.
Right.
They don't get under center very often. They like to throw the ball, and they can flat throw it. That quarterback they've got is a freshman, and he is a dandy. You'll be hearing lots about him. But it'll be power football versus the passing game next week, or RPO game. It ought to be exciting. But both of those teams are very talented. I expect a good – but the biggest game, I think, in 3A is that Fife-Ohatchee game. Because remember now, in that half bracket, Fife is a returning 2A state champion. Piedmont, returning 3A state champion. Ohatchee has beat the returning 3A state champion. And now they're going against Fife. Fife's undefeated at 12-0. Ohatchee's 11-1. So that ought to be quite a ball game right there. And then go back up to Montgomery Trinity and Montgomery Academy. They,
ooh,
you know, they don't like each other a whole lot. So
well, and then
that's 3A for you.
With Danny Horn coming, you know, leaving Benjamin Russell, going back to Clay Central. Now Clay Central in 5A. And they're going to come here. They're going to play St. Paul's, and that should be some kind of matchup
there.
And, you know, in Mobile next week, we really got some really good matchups because you got, of course, you got UMS Wright goes over and plays Jack French's Faith team, and that should be something. Should be an unbelievable matchup. And when I can't even imagine how that's going to work out because. You got speed versus speed. You got a young quarterback against a really fast defense. It's going to be interesting to see how that matches up. And you know, Jay Cozio has done such a great job at UMS with that defense. And for you know, Pike Rhodes, mighty good. They got two running backs. I think Quinshon Judkins and Griffin Robinson. They're really, really good. Judkins, I think, ran for almost 183 yards, and other kid ran for 73 yards. But what a great job Jay has done for the Bulldogs. And then you can't say too much about that young running back, Cole Blaylock, who just keeps on getting better and better. Last night, it seemed like it was all over at UMS as Pike Road scores with 1:08 to go. And they go up 17-14, and it's it was man, it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Then you look at that, they kick off to UMS, and Kobe Stafford takes the ball 95 yards for a touchdown. And then they kick off again. UMS is penalized, and they have to kick off from their own 25. Just never, it's unbelievable.
It is. And you can't make stuff like that
can't
up.
Can't make it up. And Pike Road fumbles the kickoff. Cole Blaylock picks it up and runs it in for
awesome.
A 28-17 win for UMS. That's a great win. Those
absolutely.
Kids never, ever gave up, never quit fighting. We'll be back with more PSR right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Radio Alabama.
Coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios. The Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha. Here are your hosts, Coach Rick Cleveland, Coach Mark Lasseter, and Corey Labounty.
All right, welcome back to PSR and Radio Alabama. You know, a lot of people have asked how our buddy Rush Propst is doing over in Georgia. Of course, he took the Valdosta High School game, head football job this past summer, and one of the winningest coaches, I'm going to tell you, in both Georgia and Alabama. And we all know what success he had at Hoover and Birmingham. And heck, Mark, he was 10 or 11 and 1 here at Alma Bryant. I don't think it's ever been duplicated, has it?
His first year was 12-1.
12-1, yeah. Right. Yeah. And so I'm going to tell you that the job he's done everywhere he's been has been remarkable, and we got a chance to visit with him for maybe a segment or two here. Coach, how you doing, pal? I know you had a tough night last night against a really good football team. I looked at it and saw that it was a kind of a lopsided score, but you had told me yesterday that they were mighty, mighty good. And kind of, first of all, I want to welcome you back to PSR. We hadn't talked to you in a while, but it's good to hear your voice, pal.
Well, that's great to hear both of y'all. I appreciate you having me on this morning. And, we probably played the best team in the state last night. They're really good. I knew going into it that we would struggle. And it was just one of those nights where nothing went right. You know, you get punt blocked, you get a they score on that, scoop and score. They sack the quarterback, and the ball comes out. They scoop and score that. So had a trick play, the first play of the game. They score on that. So it's just one of those nights.
Well, they got two pretty good running backs. I know looking at some stuff from earlier in the year, the McDowell kid and the Simmons kid, two pretty doggone good football players.
Yeah, they do. They really – you know – the quarterback is the McGee kid. is a receiver by trade, going to Kentucky, and a really good player. And they lost their quarterback a couple of weeks ago to hand surgery, and he's out for the year. And they would even be more dangerous, I think, with him at receiver and the quarterback playing. But pretty dang good. They're really salty on defense and give you a lot of different looks and play that odd stack, and they blitz a ton. Dean Fabrizio was a guy that actually I interviewed him for the D.C. job when I first got to Colquitt County back in 2008. It didn't work out. He stayed. Then went to Lee County as an assistant coach the next year, and then became the head coach. He's done a phenomenal job there. And, you know, just outside, you know, a little bit sits north of Albany, and I think everybody in that area up there, if you're going to want to be in a good program from an academic standpoint and from a sports standpoint, goes to Lee County High School.
Well, Dean's done a heck of a job. I mean, that was what? That's his 100th win over there. So you were both kind of going for milestones in both your own personal careers, but I know that doesn't – you don't even think about that really until two or three years after it's all said and done. But he's obviously done a pretty doggone good job there. And I would imagine that most of the players, when they're looking for a program to go to over in the Albany area, that is the premier program to go to.
It is. It is. I played them a couple of times back in 14 and 15. We was on that 30-game win streak at Colquitt, and we beat them pretty dang good. But they were good then. They had good people, good players. But now, like I told him last night, you know, his system, I mean, he's got everything in place he wants.
Right.
And when you get it rolling like he's got it rolling right now, I don't see anybody beating him, really. It could. I mean, somebody could sneak up. There's a lot of quality teams in Georgia, and, but he's just a step above, I think, in 6A.
Who beat them, Rush? I hadn't looked at their schedule, but they're 7-1. So somebody
Lowndes.
Lowndes.
Jamie Dubose. Jamie Dubose. Lowndes High School, and beat them pretty good. Actually, been 38-13 at Lowndes, handling pretty good. But Lowndes is at that time, Lowndes was playing really good football and deep. And see, we played Lowndes, and it was right down. It was 26-21. We had the ball, chance to win the game late, but didn't get it done. But I just felt like last night we were never in the game against Lee County. Where at Lowndes, it was down to the wire. But, you know, you can't compare scores, I guess. You know, Jamie's at Lowndes is a really good football team, but he ran into a buzzsaw last week. He goes over to Colquitt County, and they beat him 40-10. And, you know, and Colquitt's on one of those runs, too, now. I mean, it's they got a really good football team in 7A football. It's probably Grayson, the best team in the state of Georgia in 7A. Colquitt, Lowndes, Norcross are the probably – or elite teams. Now, there's a lot of quality depth in 7A. Usually there's 10, 12, 14, 16 teams in 7A can win it on any given year. I don't see it that way this year. In 6A, there's probably eight of us that can win it. You know, if we just get on one of those runs, you know, it's all going to be based on this COVID, man. It's just, you know, based on who you got and how it goes. See, we're way behind y'all. We still got another week of regular season next week. And then the playoffs for us start November 27th on that Friday during Thanksgiving and play all the way to December 30th is our championship.
Yeah.
That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, 29th and 30th. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday up in Atlanta. So we're behind y'all several weeks. And, you know, with the COVID stuff and everything that's going on right now in the country, I guess Georgia and Alabama are two states that are maybe not spiking as up as most other states. But it's still, we had a lot of games in Georgia canceled last night, especially up in the Atlanta area due to COVID.
You know, Rush, as I've sitting here listening to you talk, I think about all of the friendship I've had with you over the years, and I didn't realize until I came in this morning that you were sitting on 299 wins. You got one more to get 300. What does that mean to you, buddy?
Well, you know what, Mark, I know people think, well, he's full of, you know what, I really hadn't thought about it a lot. I know when I won 200, we were at Grayson, won a big ball game back in 2010, and in a semifinal game, and to take us to the state championship game. But I remember 50. Everybody remembers their first win. Everybody remembers 50, or I did. It was Shaw out of Mobile. We beat there when I was at Eufaula. I remember 100 and 150 at Hoover and 200. But once you get past that, I can't sit here tomorrow and tell you right now what 250 was or 275. So this has sort of stuck up on me a little bit. But what it means to me really is relationships that you've developed over a 31-year career as a head coach. I really, 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 guys, enjoyed being at UAB last year with Bill Clark. It was a lot of fun. We worked our fanny off to play for the conference championship against FAU, Kiffin and them. Got beat, but I live with Bill, and I had a great, great experience and was – thinking about doing that again. Also had some other opportunities at a couple of places, when Tallahassee. But when this job came open, this is just a job you don't not pursue. The Valdosta job is a job, although it's not right now. It's not where it needs to be. It's not the Valdosta that you and I all grew up knowing.
Right.
They really taking a back seat over the last 15 plus years. But, and I know I'm evading or elongating the answer that I'm giving you, but I don't think about it. It's just relationship with coaches, players. You know, I talked to Brandon Johnson that played for me at Alvin Bryant a month ago, and Antoine Odom I've talked to in the last couple of months.
Hey, Rush, hold on a second. Can you go one more break, one more segment with us?
Yeah.
All right, we're
going
to take a hard break, and we want to get back into some of that. And we'll be back with Rush Probst right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Radio Alabama.
Live on the Prep Sports Report Radio Network, it's the Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha Insurance. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to PSR and Radio Alabama. We're talking to Rush Probst, the head football coach at Valdosta High School in Valdosta, Georgia. Of course, he's won everywhere he's been, state championships at Hoover High School in Birmingham, goes to Colquitt County in Moultrie, Georgia, wins multiple state championships there, worked with Bill Clark at UAB for a year, and then took the Valdosta High School job over in Valdosta, which for many, many years, Nick Hyder, just great, great coaches there. And had run upon some, not real difficult times for what most people would think, but for Valdosta had a rough run. And Rush Probst was hired there, and they're now currently 4-4. They're in 6A Region 1, but I can imagine that they'll be in the hunt for a 6A state championship. And Rush, the one thing that Mark and I know, we watched it closely, the quarterback that transferred in from California, and seemed like to us he did everything that you're supposed to do, and all of a sudden he's declared ineligible.
He did. And let me say this, let me preface this by saying Robin Hines and I are really good friends. I've got a lot of respect for Dr. Hines. We've built a relationship as strong as you can have between a coach and the executive director of GHSA. So it was tough on Robin, tough on me, really strained our relationship a little bit, but we both have talked. He came to my game last week up in Warner Robins. We had a long talk, and here's what I feel like. I feel like political pressure got to them, and Yes, everything was done up in Rush Probst is not going to do anything. Too many eyes are upon me. He had 51 emails and phone calls in 2 hours when the news broke that Jake Garcia had come to my school. But it all happened legit. Everything was legit. There was a bona fide move made. What happened was, is in our state, and I guess in Alabama too, I don't know this to be a fact, but I do know, Mark, and you can attest to this, the dad and mom came, leased an apartment with the son. She, when they fly back to California, and this is in a matter of days now, we're talking about it, they came on August 3rd and 4th. We started August 1st. That was our first day in pad. Fall camp started July 27th. So when I'm sitting there telling you that on August 3rd and 4th, they came, they looked around, they decided to come here. They went other places to look around, but they came here, decided to come here. They then flew back to California as a family. 2 days later, on August the 9th, Jake and the dad flies back, gets in the apartment on the night, enrolls in school on the 10th. We rule him eligible. The school system rules him a bona fide student on the 11th of August. Okay. We still don't put him involved in team activities. Okay. The mother stayed back to lease her house back in California, which took to August 15th. On August 15th, she got a tenant. She leased her house. She faxed us the lease. We looked at it. We did our due diligence. We found out that it was a true tenant, not just some factitious name. She moves out of the house on the 19th of August. No, excuse me, the 18th of August. The tenant moves in officially on the 19th. Her boss, who was particular because she has a big job, said, I can't let you go to the 30th end of the month. So she left on the 31st to come to Valdosta to be with her family. House is leased. She's here. Everything's good. They do the ESPN interview, which infuriated a lot of people because of what she said about the separation. Although the separation had been started, it had nothing been signed by a circuit court judge in California. But that didn't matter. They had made the bona fide move. So once the interview came out on the 16th of September, the letter came that afternoon. It actually came 3 hours after the interview was posted by Mark Slaybaugh. 3 hours later, the letter came from the GHSA stating that he would be investigated and ruled ineligible. She gets mad. She moves back to California. But then we hold it. We don't play it. But it was, so they ruled the kid ineligible based on that the mother did not move simultaneously with the dad. But here's my thought, Mark, and you help me with this. Kid moves into Fairhope. The dad moves in with the kid. It's April 30th, getting ready for spring ball. The mother lives in Birmingham, or the family does. In June, they sell their house. She moves down. Everybody, the whole family unit's there. Is he eligible or is he ineligible?
He's eligible.
He's eligible. Yeah.
And not in Georgia.
Oof.
In Georgia, according to this rule, simultaneously, meaning that the parents all have to move at the same time with the family unit, which we contend, and most coaches in this state, I'd say 99% of every coach in this state, Jake wasn't the only one that got ruled ineligible. Del Rio gets ruled ineligible at McEacher, and you had three at Carrollton ruled ineligible. You had this kid over here ruled ineligible. And they were all high-profile kids. And I argued with Robin on this. I said, Robin, there's no way a parent can just up and leave their house in a matter of the same day. They were behind the eight ball because the season was going to start. So she only stayed back to get her house leased, and her boss wouldn't let her leave for two more weeks, actually three more weeks. But once she got everything in order, she came on. He still ruled him ineligible. So after that, and here's what gets me. They ruled him eligible to start with. We play him in the Warner Robins game. He wins the game. He throws for 335. We beat a really good Warner Robins team. With Jake Garcia, Valdez is ranked number one. Was ranked number one in the state at that time. We're sitting here at 8-0 with Jake. Probably going to win a state title with him. Now, then, once I know we go through the appeal, we lose. We go through the appeal, they lose. I finally called Grace and I said, look, y'all need a quarterback. They did. And I encouraged him strongly to move up there. He did. They ruled him eligible.
Oh, my goodness.
So he's at Grayson High School right now. He's the quarterback on the number one ranked team in 7A. And I think that's going to be the reason that they come away with a 7A state title, unless they just mess it up because they're really talented. But and Robin agrees with me. Dr. Hines agrees that the rule needs to be changed, that it's too open for discrepancies. And I think if the ESPN interview had to come out and all the your people that are mad because you get this five-star quarterback, they're calling and complaining. And I just believe the pressure got to them. And I think that's exactly what happened verbatim. You can't fight them. I mean, you can sit there and hire lawyers, this and you can do that, but at the end of the day, once they make their decision, you just might as well move on, because y'all know as well as I do, that stuff, you're not going to win. And so we had to forfeit the ball game, which I still don't understand why. My principal, my superintendent, my board of education are all still upset with the GHSA over that, because y'all ruined him eligible. Right. He was eligible when he played the first ball game. When we found out there was a problem, we sit him 3 weeks. He didn't play. And so I didn't understand that. So it's hard to sit there and look at us 4-4, went on the field, we're 5-3. And, you know, it's just, and our kid and our players have been through a lot. That was a tough blow for our football team. And, you know, we've had some major injuries too, from three ACLs and ankles and all this kind of stuff. So we're limping. But we got a week off this coming week, last week of regular season, and then, believe it or not, we got a really, really, really good draw in the playoffs. Carrollton got beat last night.
Yep.
So the number two seed for us may be a great run for us. I think we can make a deep run now in the playoffs, a real deep run.
Hey, Rush, thanks a bunch, buddy. We got to get out of here. We're on a hard break. Take care. God
right,
bless.
Man.
We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Rush.
Take care, and right, buddy. I'll see y'all down the road.
All right, pal. Take care.
PSR is live every Saturday from 8 until 10 a.m. Now, back to your hosts, Rick Cleveland, Mark Lasseter, and Corey LaBounty. I remember
the 35 sweet. All right, welcome back to PSR, Radio Alabama. The CNC Financial and Auto Sales Communication Lines. Let's talk to David. David, how you doing, pal?
And I'm doing great, guys. How about you?
Well, we're doing good.
Yes, sir.
You saw some kind of football game last night, didn't you, pal?
I'll tell you what, that was quite a game. They had some big old boys on their line, I'll tell you that much.
Well,
needless to say, we were outsized again.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, you 108, you look at the scoreboard, and it's a 17-14 game after UMS scores a touchdown. They go down in about 5-6 plays, score another touchdown, go up.
What a great catch and throw by that quarterback and receiver.
Was. Boy, it
I
was.
Mean, to make the catch and hold on, he got hammered by Jackson Graham.
Yeah, he did. And then they
and then that Bulldog magic shows up.
I'm going to tell you right now, Kobe Stafford – I just don't know.
You can't make it up, guys.
You can't, man. Them boys will play you till the I'll pass the whistle. I promise you.
It's and then UMS gets penalized. Or no, I'm sorry.
They tried to throw a penalty on that kick return. Right. I love Mobile Christian game.
Yeah. That would have been something after.
Yeah, I don't think they would have got out of there.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I was mesmerized. Totally mesmerized.
It was quite a game. I tell you, that was one of the better high school games I've ever seen. And, That's 20 years worth.
Tell us what's going on at CNC right now.
Well, you know, with all the changes going on around the country, but we kind of pared down our operation a little bit. Kind of things don't keep as much inventory in stock, and we're trying to keep our customers and help them out during this trying time and working with them in their payment plans. When you've got 200 accounts, you're bound to have a lot of issues. So we had to do to keep people in their jobs and in their vehicles and start just doing more special order type stuff. But we're still doing the same thing. I've got a lot full of cars here ready to go. You've got a job and a verifiable income, driver's license. I'll get you riding. I don't care how bad your credit is.
Now tell us how to get in touch with you and where you're located.
We are in the heart of Crichton, 3150 Moffett Road, right at the split of Spring Hill. We've got a great website. It's cncfinancialautosales.com, or it's real simple. Give us a call, 251-338-9019.
David, we appreciate you, pal. Appreciate CNC and appreciate all y'all do for high school sports, pal.
Man, we appreciate all of y'all do to keep these kids, giving them some attention when they rarely get it. Thank you for all y'all do.
Take care, bud.
Take care, bud.
You know, you look at some matchups, and, you know, when you look in 6A, you got three of the four that are in the quarterfinals now. So we know we're going to have one team in the semifinals. We think we will. We got to because Spanish Fort and Blount are going to play, so one of those two is going to advance to the semifinals. And if Saraland defeats Opelika, then we'll have an all-Mobile semifinal and be assured of a Mobile area team being.
Boy, I'd love to see that.
I would too. I'm just telling you. And, you know, you look at Opelika, and they've got such a tradition there, but they got to come to Saraland. And what Jeff Kelly and those guys have done is nothing short of remarkable. They keep winning, and they keep winning quietly.
Yes.
You know, they've done a great job there. So, and then you look what Lev Holly and those guys have done over at Blount. It's a great job. And you look up on the hill and what those guys have done up there. And boy, I'm excited to see who comes out of that matchup. And you look in North Alabama, Keith Etheridge goes to Oxford. Those guys are 11-1. They're going to go to Pinson Valley, back where Patrick Nix was. And, so whoever took his place at Pinson Valley has obviously done a great job. And then you look over in the other 6A, Clay Chalkwell at Mountain Brook. That should be one heck of a battle.
Oh, so, no doubt. No doubt. Mountain Brook's got they have been close the last few years.
Yeah.
And just getting in – had a hard time getting in the playoffs last year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But this year they've kind of kept pushing through it.
Well, they moved out of that 7A
region.
Moved out of that, and so now moving into 6A, they're in a great position.
And that'll be a heck of a ball game with them, Clay Chalkwell.
Yeah, that'll be a great game.
Two good coaches going at it.
And then you look in 5A, it's got to be something special. Steve asking those guys at St. Paul's, 12-0, and Danny Horn brings a Clay Central team in here that's only had one loss this year, and that was to the. Well, I think that was to Pleasant Grove, who came in and beat them. And so 11-1 against a 12-0 team. That's a great, great matchup. And then the winner of that game is going to play the winner of Faith and UMS Wright. So it could possibly set up another Old Shell Road game there between UMS Wright and St. Paul's. And boy, what I can't imagine limiting the seating in that kind of game. I just can't imagine. But that game would be played at St. Paul's by virtue of them being the number one in the region. So if those two do play, then that game would be played at E. Delaney Stadium. But I'm going to tell you, UMS Wright's got their hands full again with Jack French's Faith football team, because Jack has done a remarkable job.
Oh, my
there.
Gosh.
It's
yes,
just unbelievable what a job he's done there. So that's two great games right here in Mobile that we'll see. And in the bottom of that bracket, of course, Pleasant Grove, who's those guys are really good. And I'm kind of hoping that Pleasant Grove and Ramsey will win in that bottom part of the bracket, because those two have, as a matter of fact, I think one of Pleasant Grove's losses is to Ramsey. So, and that's some neat stuff there. And then you look in 4A, American Christian looks to be pretty doggone good, I can tell you that. And Hanley's had a great year up in Roanoke, and they'll play Bibb County, but American Christian and Alabama Christian in that top of the bracket with Bibb County and Hanley. And don't know a whole lot about the bottom part. I know Gordo is mighty good. They play a West Limestone team that's 11-1. And Northside, I'm still trying to figure out where Northside is, Mark. And
I think it's around Tuscaloosa, but I'm not positive on that at all.
Well, if there is, then there's two North somethings in Tuscaloosa.
North Ridge.
North Ridge, that's where Mike Vickery is.
Mike Vickery's there, that's correct. Northside used to be a little bitty 1 or 2A school in between Tuscaloosa and West Blockton. Out there somewhere. That's where it was. And well, I'm going to look it up real quick.
They have to go to Etowah. So, and Etowah's been mighty good in Gadsden. They've probably been the best team in Gadsden for a while. We all thought that the new Gadsden High School would kind of take over up there, but they hadn't done that. So Jim Cox. I get a message from Jim Cox. Jim's really hot about not being able to broadcast the games on TV. And he makes some statements that I really don't want to say on the air, but I vehemently I disagree with Jim on some of the things he says. He's blaming it on one person, and it shouldn't be blamed on a person. It should be blamed on those people who make the rules, and that's not who that person is. So
Northside High School is in Northport.
It is in Tuscaloosa.
In Northport. It's the Northside Rams. They right now, I mean, look at their record. They are 10-2. They lost to Hale County earlier in the year and lost to Gordo. And I think Gordo is the other team in that region that was number one in that region, while Northside was number two in that region. So that's Northside's playing Etowah, and that ought to be that's interesting. I don't remember Northside ever being this far in the playoffs.
I don't either.
Could very well have been. I just don't know it.
Mark, this is something that needs to be discussed. And talk a little bit about how you understand why high school games can't be broadcast, playoff games can't be broadcast by local TV stations.
You know, that's to be honest with you, that's a little bit over my pay grade.
Right.
I don't really understand all the things that go in, but there is a
but who has to make that decision?
The central board.
Central board has to make that decision.
They make that decision.
And the head of the Alabama High School Athletic Association simply carries out what the central board rules.
Well, if you hear Steve talk, every time he talks, I mean, people are complaining about this rule or that rule or this or that. He always says, this all goes out to our schools.
Right.
All things go out to our schools, and then it comes to the central board. The central board votes on it and passes it or what have you. Now, he may recommend something to go to the board of something. I mean, he has that prerogative of recommendation. But I don't think the final – I'm almost 99.9% sure he doesn't have the
– No, he doesn't make the
final decision.
The central board
on
makes a decision on that.
And it has to do with this – they started that National Federation of High Schools – has the big thing that's nationally.
Right.
And we're a part of that. And so the playoffs, once you get into the playoffs, I think the state has its own television program network deal.
Right.
And like I said, I don't really know a whole lot about it. I don't deal in that very often, but that's kind of where that came from. And it's always been that way.
Well, each individual school can stream their game. and they generally just stream it with no announcers. And the school, and you have to pay a fee, $10 a year, to subscribe to that. And thousands of people across the country do that. You and I can watch a high school game in California, but it's streamed, and it's each school, you know, that wants to be a member of the National Federation, that part of it, they can do that. I know, right. We do that at UMS. We stream every one of our games. So that's just the way it is. All right, who we got on here? Coach Raleigh, let's talk to him off the air. Let's get him off the air. We'll be back with more PSR right here on Radio Alabama and FM Talk 106.5, and we'll talk to this gentleman off the air.
This segment of the Prep Sports Report brought to you by Camp Grace. Now back to Coach Rick Cleveland.
Camp Grace is located in West Mobile as the summer home of Camp Rapahope, Camp Mash, Camp Smile, and Camp Sugar Falls, as well as the home of Outback Mobile and is shared by many other community organizations throughout the Mobile area. Camp Grace is a place where God's love is bestowed freely upon others, the true definition of God's grace. All right, we're going to go to the Camp Grace segment in just a minute, but we got a imposter who's really not an imposter. But it's we got a name confusion in between phone calls. Coach Raleigh is really our buddy Kevin Raleigh, the head baseball coach at UMS Wright. And, boy, he wants to talk a little bit about the UMS game last night. He was right there on the visitor sideline, so I know he heard an earful anyway.
Well, I mean, I read Coach Curtis' article this morning about he said it, you know, he's probably never been as proud of a group of kids, and I second it. I mean, it was just amazing. The effort, of course, you've been there a long time, Mark. You were there. You know the kind of effort you're going to get. But man, those kids last night, man, they kind of inspired me. I mean, my gosh. I mean, just, you know, they had a good football team.
Yeah.
And we kept getting punched in the mouth, and then when they got that score to go up, you know, like, oh my Lord, you know, late in the game, and then I'll be dang if we don't run the kickoff back. You know, so.
Well, the kid that made that catch down there to put them ahead 17-14, that was right in front of you.
Yep.
And David Norris called a little earlier, and he said, Coach, he got hammered. I don't know how he hung on to the ball.
I don't either. And Jackson Graham smoked him. And Jackson's one ended up getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, he was down in the end zone for a while, and Stacy and those guys had to come out and check him out. But
right.
He sat out and played. He wasn't on kickoff return, which was coming next. But when we went back on defense, he was back out there. But he got his bail on pretty good.
Ooh. All right. Kevin, thanks a bunch, and I apologize
about
Coach Raleigh.
No, just listening to you guys.
All right, take care.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
All right. That was a good call.
I
love
hearing
talk to Kevin Raleigh. It's always good. I'm going to read you something today, and then I'm going to go back and follow it up with something. Don't let this world make you bitter. Don't let the actions of other people turn you cold on the inside. Certain things happen that hurt us. People come that leave us, and most of all, there are moments when you're bound to fall. Don't let those things make you unkind. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be sad, but it's never okay to do to other people wrong just because they did it to you. We're human. We break. We make mistakes, but don't let pain and sadness run your lives. Wake up in the morning and do what you think is right. There are moments in your life where you feel like giving up and you can't take it anymore. It's okay. Breathe. Inhale. Exhale. We are all weak. But the things that show your weak side are also the same ones that make you stronger in the long run. It's all about taking whatever life throws at you and learning from it. God has a reason for allowing things to happen that we may never understand. His wisdom, but we simply have to trust His will. As I read that stuff, you know, Rick, we talk about these things all the time. When we talked just a moment ago, I mean, Kevin talked about those kids not giving up.
Yeah.
So you take the game of football, you take volleyball, you take basketball, you take any sport you play, And in every ball game, as Coach Stallings Bill Curry said years ago that I have never forgotten in a clinic, he said the game of football is marked off in yards and what have you. There's lines and there's rules and there's this. But the game of life is the same way. Once you step across that line or you're born, you walk into the game. And during that game, there's going to be all kinds of things that take place, good and bad. Throwing a touchdown pass. Let's just take, for example, that kid runs a kickoff back last night for a touchdown. What if there's a penalty flag thrown? There wasn't, but I'm saying what if.
Yeah.
Okay? And you think about those kids from Pike Road. Man, they had their heart stomped out right there at the very end of the game. And so you look at those things and you see the game of football, marked off in 100 yards, is the game of life in a little bitty compact world. What we learn from that game or those games or the things that we do, hopefully, is what's being taught to our kids that will carry them through life. When everything's going against you, when you feel like you've got nowhere to go, you're ready to give up.
Yeah.
What do? You take a breath. You inhale. You exhale. You put one foot in front of the other. You get in your lane and you stay in your lane. And your lane is full of twists and turns and difficulties. How you handle those twists and turns and difficulties, how you handle those good times in the game and bad times in the game, how you deal with all of that will mark your character. And, man, I'll tell you what, I was so fortunate, and Rick, I know you were too, to have dads, moms, coaches that always taught me, even friends that taught me something about the better way to live my life.
You know, Mark, there's a book that I learned a great deal about a long time ago because I read it, and it more or less changed my perspective on, how life's going to treat you. Name of the book is Road Less Traveled, and Scott Peck wrote that book, and the first sentence in that book is, life is difficult. And what you said this morning, talking about a straight road and a lot of curves and a lot of turns, and that's exactly what life is. Life is not a straight road. You know, you're going to make some turns, you're going to make some detours, and you're going to make some decisions that you wish you could change. And there's going to be situations that come up in our life that we just have to make some hard decisions on. And you know, one of the things that I think that I've learned, and I've learned it from a lot of different people, a lot of people that have granted a lot of wisdom to me, is that you can't make decisions based on what it will do to you. You got to make decisions based on what it will do for your family and for whatever you represent. And so those decisions that we make sometimes are wrong, and sometimes we suffer the consequences of them. But the most important thing that we can do in life, I think, is that we can try to keep it on the straightest road we can keep it on and go in the right direction and make the right turn. And if we make the wrong turn, we suffer the consequences of our actions. And, boy, during this COVID time, it's Scott Peck also says in his book, when you get in those times where you feel like there is no answer, there's going to be a day when you get on the mountaintop. And hopefully that mountaintop is where you need to be, where you want to be, and where you make decisions that will affect you and those who you love for the rest of your life. It's great stuff, Mark. We appreciate Rush Probst. Appreciate him spending some time with us this morning. Remember this. No matter what you do, no matter where you go, He is always with you. God bless you. See you here, same place, same time, next week.